Senate Committee on Labor, Consumer, and Business Affairs, Friday, June 22, 1979, 1 p.m., Hearing Room B. Hearing Senate Bill 578 relating to coordination of disabilities, House Bill 2533 relating to small claims court, House Bill 2327 relating to mass transit district payroll tax deductions. Work session Senate Bill 694 relating to maxillofacial services, House Bill 2763 relating to driver's licenses, House Bill 2726 relating to workers subject to workers' compensation law, House Bill 3075 relating to trust deeds, Senate Bill 512 relating to industrial banks, Senate Bill 852 relating to hotel motel trespass, Senate Bill 916 relating to minimum wages.
Go ahead.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Billy Bellamy, District Representative, State Representative of District 55. Before you is a simple bill, House Bill 2533, as originally introduced, increases the jurisdictional limit of the Action Small Claims Department of District Court from $500 to $1,000. My testimony is very simple. I consider this an inflation bill. It's been a while since the limit on small claims has been changed. Inflation has increased the value of things to where $500 just didn't represent what it did when this bill was originally written. A constituent wrote me and asked me why the limit had not been changed, and I couldn't give him an answer, and in the process I introduced the bill. I have introduced amendments, and I believe each of you have the amendments. The amendments propose to delete the $1,000 and include $700. There's been quite a little bit of discussion on this figure since it left the House. And I am in agreement that probably an increase of $1,000 is too great of an increase to go all at once. There's some real concern by the legal profession that as we increase the limit to $1,000 that the lawyers are going to want to get involved in small claims to represent clients. And I do not want to see that happen, and I agreed that a $700 figure would be a better figure to go at this time. The other amendment, which states the clerk of the court shall post an adequate notice of persons authorized to serve under ORS 23670, their fees in any form. And what this says is that once a client has gotten a... I can't think of the word. Once they have gotten a decision from the small claims court, then the real problem comes in: how do you collect your if the decision was in your favor? How do you collect the money? And what this states is simply this: that the clerk of the small claims court will provide to the people a list of those people or those organizations that are legally certified to do the collection of the or do the garnishment of wages or what have you. It's just a simple requirement that they be provided a form for those people in that area that are legally certified to do this. And I think that's a good provision because many people go into small claims and they get a decision in their favor and they think they really won, but they don't really understand that the real work begins and the really hard thing is the actual collection of the money or the items that you got awarded to small claims. And this provision would just simply say that the clerk of the court will provide you with that information as to who does this and that in your particular area.
I move the amendment.
Okay, Senator Wingard moves the adoption of amendments. Are there any objections? Hearing none, it is so ordered.
I move the bill out, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Wingard moves House Bill 25-33 to the floor with the DUPAC, as amended with the DUPAC recommendation. The clerk will call the roll.
Senator Hanlon?
Aye.
Senator Hannon? Senator Smith? Senator Troll?
Aye.
Senator Wingard?
Aye.
Senator Kulongoski? Senator Groner?
Aye. Motion carried. Senator Wingard will carry the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I will do my part, if it passes on the Senate side, to get lost for words.
Concurrence.
Concurrence. from the House side.
Thank you, Representative Dolan, for your help.
Thank you.
Okay, we are privileged to have with us again today Representative Otto, and we're going to hear 2327 relating to mass transit district payroll tax reduction.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Glenn Otto, State Representative District 23, Multnomah County. In our Committee on Intergovernmental Affairs, we have studied various methods of financing mass transit. And we have felt in the past that we've come up with some good ideas. And we've also realized that some of the ideas won't fly. Now, one of the concerns that we have, and that I have, is that at the present time in the TriMet area, people are being taxed throughout Multnomah County, Washington County, and Clackamas County, even though they don't receive a service. For example, the operator of Timberline Lodge is being charged a payroll tax on its employees, and yet there's no service provided. So we passed a bill that received, I think it was one dissenting vote against it, on the floor of the House, which would give the authority to the mass transit districts to shrink their taxing authority in their taxing district to that of their service area. Now, it's permissive legislation. It would allow the Lane Transit District, for example, and the TriMet District to shrink their taxing authority to their service district. TriMet has indicated that they favor the concept, that they are concerned about making up this loss of revenue, which would amount to approximately $500,000. Well, our committee was also concerned, so we looked at alternate ways of raising revenue other than the payroll tax. We found that there's the public employer that's not pay taxes, and yet the public employer oftentimes is the main beneficiary of mass transit. That's true in the Portland metropolitan area. The city of Portland, Multnomah County, school district number one, many of these public employers have good transit service. University of Oregon Health Science Center, for example, is the second largest employer in the city of Portland. They're dependent upon mass transit. Yep. The state of Oregon does not contribute to the support of mass transit in that area. So that was our concern. Well, we tried that here in House Bill 2288, and the first time on the floor it lost by one vote. Under reconsideration, it lost by six votes. So that is down the tube for this session of the legislature. Then we looked at the various exemptions. We looked and we found that religious and charitable organizations, fraternal organizations, you name it, there's a whole list of exemptions. We found that foreign insurance companies were exempt. Well, there's the source of revenue, and the amount of or the projections from the revenue department indicated that this would amount to approximately $500,000 in these foreign insurance companies if we can tap them with the payroll tax. So we passed that bill, and that's what you have before you today, 2327. Now, it was not an attempt on our part to sneak anything through our committee or through the legislature, through the House. And after it passed, we were out of committee. Mr. Bill Gerenstrom expressed some concern. And now we find that there's a lot of concern about taxing foreign insurance companies because of a retaliatory tax. Now, we certainly don't favor that. So I'm neither here in support of or in opposition to 2327. But I guess what I am saying is I would like to see this committee come up with some form of revenue without increasing the payroll tax, which is already at 0.6% in the TriMet area, and I think 0.5% in the Eugene area, without increasing that payroll tax, but will make up the difference so that TriMet and Lane County, you don't have the problem, but in the TriMet area, you can shrink the boundaries and have an offset to take care of this approximate $500,000 of lost revenue. Now, the only suggestion I have that we didn't look at, and that is to tax the sole proprietorship and the partnership. We're talking about doctors, lawyers, other professional people who are sole proprietors and partner and are in a partnership arrangement. Presently, they are exempt. Now, we didn't look at that, and that might be a source that you folks might look at. And I'm sure that...
What about lawyers? Are they taxed?
No, they're not. Their help, their secretary, for example, they would have to pay a tax on their secretary, but their income that they receive is not taxable. So that's where we're at. And all I'm asking this committee to do is to find some source of revenue so that TriMet can get some more bucks into the cash register so that they can shrink their boundaries and tax only those people within their service boundaries rather than imposing this tax outside of the service boundaries.
Hey, Representative Otto, I've been working with Dick Feeney, and I know he is concerned also and is interested in reducing TriMet boundaries
right
to the area which we serve. And I think what we do, we have to have somebody, as you know, the time is short. Already you have the advantage of the House bill, and if we do something on this side, I can assure you we'll work on it and see, and probably solicit your help in the next few days.
Well, Mr. Chairman, what our committee did was recommend to the Speaker that a task force be appointed or an interim committee be appointed to study this area of mass transit financing. I'm opposed to the payroll tax. That's my feeling. I think that the mass transit districts do have other methods of taxation that would provide operating funds and funds for capital expenditures, but we have to also realize that they're politically sensitive and don't always exercise the full authority they have in the areas of taxation. But I think something is going to have to be done. We're talking about expanding mass transit. The dollars are going to have to come from somewhere. And I don't think it should that the payroll tax should be the only source of support.
Do you have any idea what partnerships taxing go for proprietorships and partnerships would bring in?
I have no idea. You know, if I were to give you a figure, it would only be a guess. Well, I wouldn't know where to.
Let's work on it. And,
okay. I had another bill. And go ahead and fix the substitute the payroll tax and use an employee tax, so that all employers were paying the same amount of dollars per employee. Well, there wasn't enthusiasm for it on our committee, and I was unable to get it out of committee.
I want to ask Senator Hanlon if he would work with you and others on the subcommittee. I'd probably just see me and see if we can come up with something. Is that fair enough? And with that, we'll close the hearing.
I just want to comment if I could. Yeah. And I appreciate what you're trying to do, Glenn, and I've worked in that same area, and I really think publics ought to be involved in paying for part of the transit use they have, because they are the greatest users.
Right.
I agree, especially with the University of Oregon there. They are the major users of mass transit.
We have the downtown mall in Portland. The city hall is located on the mall. The J.K. Gill building, which is county, is located on the mall. The Multnomah County Courthouse is located on the mall. Portland State University, just off of the mall. Major users, and yet we can't get any dollars out of them.
Yeah, it hasn't been a fair situation. I think your employer idea, the number of employees also is a valid idea.
Right.
Rather than the amount of payroll. The amount of payroll that has no significance as to.
Right. Well, I work for an electrical contractor, and none of our employees ride mass transit. No.
But they're the highest paid employees around almost.
Yeah. The other thing is, the person that pays the minimum wage pays approximately 14 cents per day per employee. My employer pays 74 cents per day per employee. And if it were averaged out, the figure would be right around 37 cents per day per employee. But that's another difficult situation to address.
Glenn,
thank you.
We appreciate you trying to help with that problem, and I realize it's a problem.
Well, I'm not really looking to help my district as much as I am trying to help your district, Senator Warner, because
I'm always trying to.
Yes, I know. You do have many of those employers in your district that are outside of the service area, and it's really those people that I'm trying to help.
I'm with Governor Walter Brown, and I'm always trying to help him out.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Thank you.
Okay. With that, let's go to House Bill. First, we'll entertain a motion to take Senate Bill 578, Senate Bill 694. Senator Stroh has moved it to be taken from the table. Are there any objections? Hearing none, it is so ordered. Okay, we have to sign up list on 578. Steve Telfer.
I have Mr. Holscher from the Attorney General's office with me, who drafted the bill. I'm Steve Telfer, for the record. I'm here on behalf of the Association of Oregon Counties, League of Oregon Cities, and the Oregon School Boards Association. I have two documents to hand out. One is a copy of my testimony. The other is a copy of the fiscal impact statement that Millman and Robertson, who serves the public employee retirement system, has prepared to address the impact of the bill. Senate Bill 578 was introduced at the request of the Association of Oregon Counties and League of Oregon Cities and is one of the priority employment relations bills of their respective legislative committees. The bill is intended to require disability benefit coordination between the public employees' retirement system, workers' compensation, and Social Security. Although the bill is easily perceived as a labor management issue, The real public policy issue is whether tax dollars should be used to contribute to three separate employee benefit systems, which can and often do provide combined benefits which significantly exceed the disabled public employee's income at the time of injury. Under present law, a public employee injured on the job is entitled to time loss, medical, and in the event of a permanent disability, either partial or total disability benefits under the Workers' Compensation Act. At the same time, if the employee is a member of PERS, a disability retirement allowance is available, as is a Social Security disability benefit. These benefits are not taxed. Remember, the issue is not whether these benefits should exist. It is should their combined value exceed even gross take-home pay before the injury. And I'd like to cite several examples, and I might also add that the courtesy of the House Labor Committee was extended because on their Worker Recovery Act, this very issue happens to be part of the fact, and they had an exhibit which I have borrowed from them, which cites three examples, one involving a corrections officer for the state of Oregon, showing what his safe benefit is, $290.44, and the PERS disability income, all of this tax-free, and goes right on down the line. In my testimony, you'll see some differences between the net tax-free income as a result of stacking these benefits one on top of the other, and the salary, gross salary, prior to the time of the injury. And out of that, you'll note that, frankly, there are a number of people who are getting more money by stacking these various benefit levels up that are funded by, in part by employer tax dollars, than at the time they were receiving in salary at the point of injury. It is my understanding that PRS has approximately 2,500 active disability retirement cases, and it is estimated that as many as 25% of those involve combined benefits higher than pay at the time of the injury. This situation creates a disincentive for the disabled worker to use available rehabilitation services and return to suitable work, at the same time creating an unnecessary long-term drain on the retirement trust. There are two ways you could attack this problem. One would be to eliminate duty disability from PERS altogether, in favor of simply relying on the workers' compensation system. The other technique, which is suggested here by this bill, would be to simply require the coordination of the benefits so that you couldn't end up getting more than the injury salary at the point of the injury. The bill, as it's been drafted, takes the latter approach. It is amending a section in the Retirement Act by adding other earned income from workers' compensation and Social Security disability benefits as an offset against PERS disability benefits. Now, I'm very cognizant of the problems we've had since the 77 session, and I know this committee is particularly cognizant of it, about the whole area of the Social Security offset in workers' comp. And while I certainly would like to see total coordination, if it's your pleasure, we certainly would not oppose the notion of taking out that aspect of it.
The Social Security offset and workers' comp, there's no loss of income whatsoever.
That's correct.
And no loss of benefits whatsoever. Here, a person would be getting less than they normally would if this bill passes with a coordination of benefits. And we've had this bill in several times in past sessions,
right,
as you well know. And
this has been in the law and out of the law a number of times. And the public policy issue, really, it seems to me, is whether or not the retirement system, which is a trust contributed to by the public employees and their employers, should be bearing the burden or a portion of the burden on duty-related disabilities, or should we, in fact, really be putting all of that into the comp system, because, after all, that's what the comp system is designed for? The fiscal impact is very minimal. The sheet that you have in front of you from Milliman Robertson highlights the fiscal impact, breaks it out by the state, the schools, the political subdivisions, on an average basis, expressing it as a decrease in the employer contribution rate, as expressed as a percent of covered payroll. You can see that it isn't any grand sum. It's in the case of the political subdivisions I represent, it's only a half of a percent. These rates, incidentally, are set up actuarially to go out over a 30-year period of funding. So we're not talking a lot of dollars. We're really talking about just a philosophical public policy issue. Mr. Holzer may have some comments that would be enlightening.
Mr. Holzer, do you support the bill?
Senator Gruner, as Ms. Telfer indicated, I drafted the bill. The matter came to my attention about 6 months or so ago when I became responsible to represent the Public Employees Retirement System in addition to the Oregon State Labor Council, and I determined how many of these disability retirement applications there were on the shelves, and I got some experience with hearings on these applications. And the two things that alarmed me, as I said, the total fiscal impact compared to the $1.8 billion worth of assets in the retirement system is not very significant. But the two things that alarmed me were, one, I was forced to go through a hearing, an administrative proceeding, on disputed applications, and they principally arise out of duty applications, duty disability applications, which essentially duplicates the hearing that is being held by SAFE. The second is that since there was no coordination of benefits, it was impossible to rehabilitate many people who medically could perform at least lesser duties than they might have had at the time of the disability. The physical and mental handicap law, as you know, requires the employer, public or private, to reinstate an employee who suffered a workman's compensation injury after the injury has healed and become stabilized. And if the employee cannot perform his old duties, the physical handicap law requires that the employee be given another job that he may perform. Well, I determined that many PERS disability, quote, duty, unquote, applications were of individuals who could quite easily perform some other duty, but they weren't being given that duty by their public employer. And in addition, they were receiving more gross tax-free take-home pay than their gross salary at the time of the injury. To be frank with you, if the Secretary of State audits the books of the retirement system, I'd just like to be on public record that I've made every effort to coordinate these benefits, whether or not the legislature does so adopt that. I agree with Mr. Telfer that the simple way to handle this is for compensation, duties, related compensation to be handled by SAFE in a single hearing process, and for the retirement system to handle the non-duty disability. But failing that, I think there should be coordination.
Saying if he's injured off the job, that should be under the retirement
yes.
system. But if he's injured on the job, then he should be solely compensated by
at the moment, Senator, if you've been on the job,
this place public employees only so it be covered by state, right?
At the moment, Senator, under PERS, if you're injured on the job, it doesn't make any difference how long you've been on the job, you can draw a duty disability. If you are within the retirement system for 10 years, you can receive a disability for a non-duty related disability. I don't think the number of years is important. I think the philosophical problem is whether you use the retirement system in addition to workman's comp.
How much would that save the retirement system?
Looks like only $500,000 a year.
I mean, bypassing this bill would save $500,000
yes.
a year. Then they could afford to give me the $200 a month I'll get after 24 years.
I don't think the dollars are so important as the fact that you can't rehabilitate individuals because they're drawing as much or more in the various combined disabilities as they were at the time they were working.
Any further questions from the committee? If not, thank you. Roger Brandenburg?
Brandenburg.
How do you say it's firefighters?
Go right ahead, Roger. We're sort of listening.
I'm kind of getting organized, Senator. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, before you have just my testimony. I will read that to you at this point, and then we'll diverse from there if you don't mind, please. Leading state firefighters are not advocating that a person should gain monetarily as a result of an injury. We do oppose this piecemeal approach to reducing benefits to recipients that are on permanent total disability. The total benefits that an injured worker receives today from workman's comp, Social Security, PERS, are in fact parts of the benefit package that the worker pays into, either directly or indirectly. Senate Bill 578 does not say that the worker's contribution shall be reduced in equal amount, equaling the reduction to the total benefits. It says that you'll continue paying the same premiums while you enjoy, in fact, less benefits. In the 1975 session of this legislature, through House Bill 3005, language was deleted that required premium payments without the privilege of receiving benefits in the public employee's retirement system. This session, this committee, your committee, Labor Committee, has already dealt with similar language in Senate Bill 304, and you had it deleted from that particular bill. Our investigation shows that out of 1,800 professional firefighters in the state of Oregon, there is just one firefighter that the offset suggested by Senate Bill 578 would affect. Until such a time that someone looks upon the total compensation and benefit package of our injured workers, the Oregon State Firefighters stand in opposition to this piecemeal approach as suggested by 578. We appreciate your time. We would ask that you table this as you consider this bill. It was suggested, if I might go on a little bit further, that with the card that Mr. Telfer was showing with regards to profits that some of our injured workers are making, that there may be some gross profits to be gained by an injured worker. Obviously, there is some cases, and I indicated in my testimony that there is one firefighter from Springfield that we have in this category. Now, what isn't stated is, in fact, that this man's got added obligations at this point in time to his benefit package as an employee includes health welfare, dental payments that are part of his benefits when he's an employee. As an injured worker, he obviously is paying some of this himself. There's other cases to be made. I guess the point we're trying to make is that we feel pretty strongly that during this interim that there'll be some action with regard to the House Bill 3125 that Representative Crest, in fact, is working with quite strongly, the Workman's Recovery Act. We think this would be the appropriate vehicle in which to address this overall problem rather than taking this band-aid approach at this time. And with that, I'll keep it short and entertain any questions that you might have at this point.
Senator Crowe, any questions? Do you think your benefits are excessive when you're injured in collecting retirement benefits also?
Obviously, I don't, Senator. As I was saying to the rest of the committee just a moment ago, there's quite a number of expenses that weren't alluded to that a person has to incur.
What are your expenses?
Personally, my expenses to Blue Cross alone are $102 a month. One of the illustrations that the previous speaker showed you showed a benefit of $15 a month more than he was making before he went off.
Were they expected to coordinate benefits that you were paying for?
Pardon me?
Does the bill call for coordinating benefits that you pay for?
No, it doesn't speak to that at all. It in fact, speaks to...
It speaks to benefits that your employer pay for, right? Such as workers' comp and...
Yes, PRS and the workers... Yes.
PRS, okay. Yes. Your employer pays for that, right?
Yes, they do indirectly. It's a fringe that...
Fringe benefit.
Yes. Obviously, it's you're paying for it in the long haul.
Is there any validity to the argument that other people are going to receive less? But actually, talking about people funds here. You understand what I mean?
Yes.
The more money you can maintain for the people, at some point in time, the better off you are. For retirement, is there anything in this bill, if this bill passed, that would allow more money to be available for retirement because there would be a more close watching of the dollars and a matching of the dollars at the present? Would there be more dollars eventually out at the end for retirement for all people concerned if you keep a draw on the fund down as much as possible?
Well, I don't know that I quite understand the question, Senator Wingard, but I'll give it a try.
Don't try to answer if you don't understand it. What I'm saying is...
Let me paraphrase, if I may, please. You're asking me basically that if the monies that would be saved by this bill, as I perceive it, would in fact benefit the PERS system.
Right.
As the Attorney General's man here testified to you a moment ago, I think we're talking about one half of 1% or half of $1 million. Given the scope of PRS, I think the impact is negligible in my mind, as I understand the bill, Senator.
Do you have any more questions, George?
No, thank you.
We have this example. I assume you've seen this for a firm by the 1,586 gross per month. Your take-home pay would be what? $900,000 with that much? 1,586, what would his take-home be?
I really don't have a number that I could give you that would be accurate.
400 about maybe 1,000, 1,100 a month. I imagine 30% out. You may have 1,000. So you receive that, you'd be receiving, you'd have 1,000 take home pay, roughly, at $1,586 a month. If you're injured, you'd have net tax-free income of $1,603 and roughly $1,600,
Yes, I believe this is...
How do you justify that is what I'd like to know.
Okay, I think if this was a continuing, ongoing thing forever for life...
That's taxpayers' money that's paying for it.
All right. Like I say, Senator Groner, this, in fact, if it went on and he made this proportionate difference to the rest of his life, I think we'd have a valid argument. I think that a case can be made
It could go on for the rest of his life.
Pardon me?
It could go on for the rest of his life if he's permanently totally disabled.
Oh, yes. Yes, and like I indicated in my testimony, we have one firefighter in the city of Springfield that, in fact, comes within under this category. The fact of it is, though, that what isn't spoken to on the other side of the ledger is the expenditures that he, in fact, incurs. And we're not talking about the trauma and other things that he endures, but, in fact, the monetary expenditures that he has that he didn't have prior to the injury.
Like what would be the monetary expenditures?
One of those that I alluded to would be his health. Another would be his dental plans. Whatever the employer was paying him as a benefit prior to his injury in the line of duty, as we call it.
He'd have medical care for the rest of his life under workman's comp if he were injured on the job.
He himself. Yes.
He himself would have, yes.
Yes.
Medical care for the rest of his life, plus that 1,000. In fact, it increases as the average weekly wage increases, so would his workman's comp benefit. Anything further? Any further questions? If not,
where's the time?
We'll close the hearing on Senate Bill 578 and go to the next bill.
I'd like to thank the committee for their time.
Thank you. Senate Bill 852 relating to hotel motel trespass. Would you give your name for the record?
For the record, I'm Dina Sweeney. I represent the Oregon Hotel Motel Association and the Oregon Motor Hotel Association. And Peter Gunner was with me. He is the attorney for the groups before when we testified before the committee. However, Peter has been in Spain for 40 days and I wasn't able to get him back for this bill.
Senator Wingard. Okay. Senator Wingard, have you seen the amendments that she proposed?
Yes, I have, Senator. I told her to ring before the committee. That looked like it was a logical way to go. I wanted Senator Kulongoski as an attorney to look at them. Senator Kulongoski and I were both concerned about the previous language that allowed a certain amount of force to remove a person from the property. We felt that was both felt it was excessive. I think the bill, as it is now written, it's much better in that it requires that a police officer be used to remove the person. And since we do have a standardized police training law in this state that requires that certain procedures would have to be used for forceful eviction, so it would also seem that it's much better bill, but I'll bring it back before the committee to let them talk about it.
Is there anyone in the audience who would care to testify on 852? Not Senator Crowe.
I'm wondering if the language substitutes police officer for the other way of removing the guest. But I wonder in the line above that, says the hotel keeper shall have the guest in chattels. I think chattels is misspelled, but of the guest may not be moved by a police officer. I wonder if it shouldn't be may, rather than shall.
The reason that shall was put in there, Senator Hoffman, is because of the concern regarding who and how this would be in effect. And that would only be if the guest refused to move, if you notice it with that extra language. If they become a trespasser, generally they're called, they say, oh, fine, I'll get out. And it's only when they refuse to depart that you then would call the police and they would come. They do that now, you see, but there's no provision in the law. If you will look on the second half of
In every instance, the hotel keeper would want to do that.
Yes, if they refuse to leave. If they physically refuse to leave their room, they would want to do that.
In every instance.
Yes.
You never know of a situation where they wouldn't.
They don't want to do it. They don't want to physically do it themselves.
They just say shall, and so it means then the hotel keeper has no choice. If he had may, he would have little choice.
He could couldn't he tell the person, I have no choice but to call a police officer if you physically remove.
So you have to remember the procedure generally, almost right down the line, is for a hotel keeper to call the room if they can get a hold of, or go down to a meeting if they know someone's there. The people don't like to do this. This is only when we've got a situation where someone is either having a problem with it. And the reason that the language was put in there to depart from a transient lodging in sufficient time for the hotel keeper to honor a confirmed reservation is to augment any concerns any of the committee or members, anyone would have about, so they're a trespasser 10 minutes after 12 because checkout time is that. Mm-hmm. Hotel people are not interested in that.
Yeah.
They're concerned about these people. There are a few situations, but it does happen, that simply they can't get them out of there, and they really have no law behind them. And I started to say, if you look at all these other ORSs, I check those, and there is no procedure for them to move them.
Yeah. I don't object to a procedure at all. All I'm objecting to is the shell, but it sounds to me like the hotel keeper must move them that way. And if he doesn't, if for whatever reason he chooses to make an exception, then I wonder if he's not liable. If he acts that way for one person and doesn't for another, if it's their shell.
They felt that it would probably relieve the mind. I know Senator Kulongowski was extremely concerned about, quote, the goons coming in and carrying these people out, or the red jacket people carrying people out. If we put it shell, and I talked to my legislative committee, they say this is the way they operate now. They call the police. They don't want to get into a fisticuff thing.
Oh, I know that.
Yeah.
Well, the mayor wouldn't. The mayor would still give them all the power. Just to give them the matter of discretion.
I'm at your disposal. If it's the committee's pleasure, I'll be glad to put me in.
Mr. Chairman, to make this consistent with the current existing statutes on this area, I'm going to propose that it be worded, if I could, in a way, and you, if you're right with me,
okay. Tell me what you're saying.
Okay, Section 2, it should be written in this form. I'll go slow. A guest commits the crime of criminal trespass in the second degree if he
or she
intentionally continues to remain unlawfully in a transient lodging after the departure date of the guest's reservation without the approval of the hotel keeper.
Okay, what is second degree trespass?
That's basically what they're asking for now.
I just reworded it.
I didn't change anything to make it consistent and use the same definitional phrases that are in the existing statute so that you would remain. Have you got it now?
Yeah, can I ask one question?
Yes.
Would you need to cite ORS 164245?
You don't have to do that.
Okay.
No.
Time,
okay. I see. No, I don't think you have to do that.
Okay, you have to maybe day after.
No.
Okay.
Because they define that down in guest. Now, the second one, do you have any objection to that?
No.
Do you have that written down?
Okay.
I would move that amendment to it, Mr. Chairman.
Why is that better than the other?
Because it makes it consistent, of course, with what the existing statutory definition of criminal trespass is. And this way,
you've got a situation which you're trying to identify, and you're using the same, I hate to use this buzzword, that's why the phrase remain unlawfully is used, because that's in the existing statute. Okay. I didn't change anything in substance.
No, you just turned it around and made it so it stays in the sentence.
Well, that's lucky to read it back for
you. Let me read it. I'll read it. A person commits the crime of criminal trespass in the second degree.
It would be any person or a person.
I'm sorry, it should be a guest. I want to keep the word guest.
Okay, I had that, and then I changed it. Okay.
A guest commits the crime of criminal trespass in the second degree. Are you supposed to say he or she?
If that person.
If that guest, because guest includes the individual.
If that guest. Intentionally continues to remain unlawfully in a transient lodging after the departure date of the guest reservation without the approval of the hotel keeper, period. Mm. And then you keep the same definition as guest that's in the statute.
I'm asking one more time, and I don't mean to remain ignorant on this, but in that 164245 is a specific section regarding criminal trespass for the hotel keepers. And this is adding to Chapter 699.
I think that the crime of criminal trespass in the second degree triggers that particular statutory reference.
Okay.
Now, Mr. Chairman, I would move that amendment.
Do you have the motion?
Yes.
Yeah. Are there any objections? Hearing none of the orders.
Now, the problem, Mr. Chairman, Senator Troll was asking about it, the police officer. I think that probably that you should have it may, because it's, I think legally you may put yourself in a position that
something could.
That's right. And
I would accept may, and I would have proposed it. However, I was reacting to the strong feeling about having, you know, someone that was legally able to do it, and so that was why Shell was proposed.
Well, the Shell applies to the hotel keeper, not to what you can do. It, the may just gives that the hotel keeper the option of doing
it.
And then change the shall to may. Okay. Mr. Chairman, I would move as an amendment then to change the shall to may, where it says the hotel keeper shall, I could say may.
Okay. You've heard the motion to change the shall to may on line 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of sub 3. Are there any objections? Hearing none of this, no orders. Motion to
move it as amended.
Senator Stroll, Senate Bill 852 is amended to be passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Dana has a problem.
Can we make sure that chattel is spelled correctly?
Yes.
It's supposed to be EL.
I
think that was my fault.
Senator Crowe for his good observation. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Hanlon.
Aye.
Senator Hannon. Senator Smith. Senator Crowe.
Aye.
Senator Wingard.
Aye.
Senator Kulongoski.
Aye.
Senator Groner.
Aye. Motion carried.
Thank you for your assistance.
I'm a little steam. Did you?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we have.
I was about to do it.
Mr. Chairman, what I did last night, that we talked about a minimum wage, and we amended the bill at last night's hearing, if you recall. floor room to pick up some amendments that Representative Kress put over, and the chairman had a concern
on the penalty clause.
On the penalty clause.
In 916?
Yes, sir.
You have the amendment?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chairman. I'm just trying to find where Rocky put the bill at. With. Okay. Where's the bill that those amend?
What's the amendment? You have the bill in the bill. We have the amendments here on 916 that are. I can read the amendment for you.
I've got it, Mr. Chairman. The chair, as it recalls, on the very last page, had a concern that where it said on section 5, I'm looking on page 4 of the amendment dated 6/20/79, lines 17 through 22. And that was a penalty provision that, as it's currently written, requires the employer to be subject to a 75% of the minimum wage for each hour of work time that the student learner is gainfully employed. And the chairman addressed two questions. One was the size of 75%, and the second one, whether that was too high. And the second one was, is it was open-ended, that if the student learner worked for the individual for 6 months, if in fact that would be cost prohibitive for a small employer. But what I did, after talking to the chairman, is that the proposed amendments that are dated 6/21/79, I went to the existing statute, and I reworked it so it says that failure to comply with sections 2 and 3 that subjects the employer to a penalty of 50%. So the first one is I changed 75 to 50%, and then I put in this clause, provided that in no case shall such penalty continue for more than 30 days, and provided further, the employer may avoid the penalty by showing his or her financial inability to pay the wages or compensation at the time they occurred. Now, I took that right out of the existing wage claim statute on the payment, the penalty provision on the withholding of not paying wages within the 48-hour period required by law. Mr. Chairman, does that satisfy that?
Satisfies me.
I would move that amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Let's move the adoption of the amendment dated 6/21/79. Are there any objections? Hearing none, it is so ordered.
Mr. Chairman, I move the bill to the floor and the due pass. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Wingard.
And then what this bill really does, it preempts the Wage and Hour Commission, and is that correct?
In that six, yes, it does. In the situation that's identified in the bill, specifically, that's correct. And the exemption is that they have on 18 and 19, George, of the first page of the amendment, it says who are student learners. In other words, the Wage and Hour Commission retains authority over those.
I haven't got a complete bill here, and I can't really work. Can I look at your issue?
That was the amendment adopted.
What's the date on that?
6/27/79.
I haven't got one of those either.
Does anybody post the amendment for those two?
I don't know what happened.
Do you have the amendment, copy of the amendment?
You can put that one thing.
I don't have the bill he's talking about.
What happened is the staff, they're getting it right now. And they didn't put the amendment that we adopted last night in the book.
Well, I just have to say, I really don't want to preempt the. I'm not convinced that that the Wage and Hour Commission isn't a viable body, and just because they make one decision we disagree with, that we have to preempt them. I don't know. Maybe I don't know something about what's going on with those. What I want to do is really split the question. I'm willing to vote on the minimum wage section. I don't have a problem with that. But I don't want to preempt the Wage and Hour Commission. I mean, that's difficult to do, I guess. But I want the record to show that I have no difficulty with the minimum wage portion of the bill and would vote for that as such. But to preempt the Wage and Hour Commission, I don't feel comfortable in doing that.
What is there a motion before us now?
Chairman, why don't I do this? Why don't I attempt to find out where we're at, and then let me try the bill as we amended it last night, and with the amendment today. And
amendments have been adopted.
Yes, sir.
In the bill.
The bill is in the present form that I would desire to be sent out.
For lack of a motion, I guess we'll
call
the next
motion.
Bill.
I'll make a motion.
Okay. Senator Coon Dodson moves Senate Bill 916 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. The clerk will call the roll.
Senator Hanlon?
No.
Senator Hannon? Senator Smith? Senator Crow?
Aye.
Senator Wingard?
No.
Senator Kulongoski?
Aye.
Senator Groner?
Aye. Motion has failed.
Mr. Chairman, a secondary motion to it. I would move that the bill, that the amendment that were submitted last night by Representative Crest be deleted from the bill, and that the bill, the minimum wage bill, as it was originally introduced, be sent to the floor with a due, well, I've got to take them out. I move that they be removed from the bill. So then the bill that you would be voting on is the printed copy of the bill with the only amendment that is different in it is the one that said on line 14 where it should read for the period July 1, 1979 to December 31st, 1979.
Yeah.
I would move that the bill be amended to reflect that, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, you've heard the motion. Are there any objections? Hearing none, it is no.
I turn the bill to the floor with a due pass recommendation, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Kulongoski moves the bill 916 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. The clerk will call the roll.
Senator Hanlon?
No.
Senator Hanlon? Senator Smith? Senator Crow?
Aye.
Senator Wingard?
Aye.
Senator Kulongoski?
Aye.
Senator Groner?
Aye. Motion carried.
I will get that one through.
Modesty. Senator Kulongoski should remember the scriptures that are appropriate. When a man takes his stand, take heed lest he should fall.
I want to explain my vote, Mr. Chairman. I think that this bill would have had a difficult time with that added amendment, and I think you would have had a very difficult time passing the bill on the floor with that amendment. And the way the bill is now, I don't think you'll have a difficult time passing it.
Okay, thank you, Senator Wingard. Okay. Let's go to Senate Bill 512. Adopted the amendment to it last night.
It deleted the
were those that were. Pages 2 and 5 were adopted yesterday and are now ready for a vote as far as the bill is concerned. Deleted the Industrial Bank Corporation, the Guarantee Corporation, was deleted from the bill. or they would come under FDIC. I will move Senate 512 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. The clerk will call the roll.
Senator Hanlon?
Aye.
Senator Hanlon?
Aye.
Senator Smith? Senator Crow?
No.
Senator Wingard?
No.
Senator Kulongoski?
Is the best position of the end? No.
Senator Broner?
Aye. Let's see, what is the vote? Would you give?
3-3.
3-3. Motion has failed. Okay. Try another one. Twenty-seven sixty-three. We heard this last night. There are some that didn't have it. Yeah, we heard it a week ago. And there's some amendments up to that, I believe, that you have here. If you want to give a copy to the paper.
It
should be in your book.
Looks like it.
It's a locked up bill.
Immediately following the bill, you have a hand and gross version incorporating the amendment page June 21. Senator Kulongoski chaired the
subcommittee
on this bill. And Senator Kulongoski, would you care to cover that or do you think?
I think that the amendment, put it this way, Mr. Chairman, it's really written, the one amendment that we came up to, which is the substantive one, is we've added a new Section 4, which is a sunset. And it's repealed as of July 1, 1981.
Well, we got a chance to see how it's going to work for.
That's right. That's exactly what we did. Now, the other amendments there, which I have, are all housekeeping amendments, and they were put in by legislative counsel to conform the bill to the existing statutory scheme. Chairman, this time I move the amendments to House Bill 2763.
Senator Kulongoski moves the amendment, adoption of the amendment to House Bill 2763. Are there any objections? Hearing none, it is so ordered.
Mr. Chairman, I move to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Senator Kulongoski moves 2763, House Bill 2763, to do the floor with a due pass recommendation. The clerk will call the roll.
Senator Hanlon?
No.
Senator Hanlon?
No.
Senator Smith? Senator Crow?
Aye.
Senator Wingard?
Aye.
Senator Kulongoski?
Aye.
Senator Broner?
Aye. Motion is carried.
Chairman, I'm going to vote against the council.
Senate Bill 512.
We'll try again.
Let's take House Bill 2726.
I wish we had our whole bill book here. We could find something maybe we could buy it.
Yeah. We've had enough hearings on this now, and I think the committee's pretty well made up their mind. What this does is a number of exemptions for workers' comp. There's a fear of some members of the committee that this will set a bad precedent, and there'll be others coming in subsequent years, forming as independent contractors, and will be seeking the same exemption. There are those that have, like the independent long haulers, common carriers, who are independent contractors now and are paying workers' comp that would like to be exempt from it. I guess that they have to pay with civil states for the high cost of diesel and the added expenses. I presume it's a considerable burden for them that you put on for the committee.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Have we adopted the amendment?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
What are those? The amendment is 61679.
Well, it's 61679 or 616?
616.
They were not adopted.
Mm-hmm. They weren't adopted?
There was a motion made that it was never voted on.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move that the committee adopt the amendment dated 61679.
Okay, Senator Hanlon, can we adopt amendment dated 61679?
Chairman, I'm going to oppose the amendments in the bill. I think that as you've all educated me on trying to exempt workers' comp from, Northwest Cooperative Association, the evils of allowing all these people to come out of the workers' comp system, I think it's just terrible.
You want to add a little amendment to the bill, Senator?
Yeah. Well, I'm tempted. I'm very tempted to it.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
If I recall the testimony, there's more to it than that. There's some people here who have traditionally been exempt because of a particular court ruling. Now that's the question. If we're going to continue their status, they need a bill. I think that's a very good reason for having a bill. I'll support the amendment. I'll support the bill.
The amendment is much broader, Chuck, than what they presently have. Because you're picking up an awful lot of people that, in my opinion, it's going to pick up a large number of people who much larger than presently exist. And especially 13, the person who performs common carrier contract carrier services, both furnishes and maintains the motor vehicle. The issue they've been fighting out for years is the same thing with the unemployment comp. What you've just done is you set up a situation in which there'll be no, you set an incentive to have everybody classified as an independent contractor.
Good, then it wouldn't have all those problems with comp insurance, would it?
Somebody'd have to be taking care of them.
They would be, or they wouldn't work for somebody who wouldn't take care of them.
Let's see.
I'm afraid that's too light, Eagle, for serious consideration.
Senator Hannon has made a motion that we adopt the amendment.
And that's what the motion was.
The motion was to adopt the amendment.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, can I ask a question?
Okay.
We heard testimony on these amendments, the 16 amendments. I remember hearing testimony on the on the 13 amendments by Jack Kalinowski.
We had a man from a trucking company, I think, in Medford that talked to us about that.
About the ones on the 16.
Yeah, that was been number 13.
Yeah, Rocky will explain. Yeah, Rocky will explain what's happened. He has his
And we had the taxi, actually I remember when we had the taxi cab people in and
taxi cab, right.
And they said they had not been covered previously, but under this new court case that they would be required. Is that what their testimony was?
Right. On the 14th, we had three sets of amendments. Kalinowski's amendments, David Stewart's of Byrne Trucking amendments, and the taxi cab driver amendments. And on that night, we passed the amendments in concept. The following day, I went to legislative council and had them draft up some LC amendments.
All right.
And then, the other night, I believe Senator Hammond wanted to delete. Senator Hammond wanted to delete the last five lines on the legislative council amendments.
Which were?
The 616
amendments. Well, I've since had further conference with the people who are concerned, and those lines, that language ought to be reinserted, so I'm not standing in support of the deletion of those lines.
Which were those lines?
That would be 1, 2, 3, 4,
Well, 12 and 13.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Those that were necessary.
Was duplicating, but we found that as Bob Knight said it was necessary.
Question, the amendments have been passed.
The amendments have been adopted?
Right. The ones they were adopted originally in concept, and the 616 amendments you have are the legislative council version of the amendments we adopted in concept.
Are those the ones we referred to as the Kalinowski amendments?
No.
These Mr. Chairman?
All three.
I would then amend my original motion and move the House Bill 2726 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Is there the understanding that the amendments that we have been discussing, all of the Kalinowskis, the cab drivers, the truck, the common carriers, are in one amendment?
No, Mr. Chairman, I need to ask another question.
Yes.
Jack testified before us, I believe, that there was nothing in this major that was a so-called union-busting provision, and he explained why, and I wonder if he could...
He explained why, as far as his industry was concerned.
Yeah, but I wonder if he could reiterate that for the record.
Mr. Chairman, member of the committee, Jack Kalinowski, representing the AGC. That question came up after I gave my testimony, Senator Wingard, and I pointed out in response that our labor union agreement with the Teamsters Union requires every independent contractor that owns and operates a truck to join our to join the Teamsters Union. That is a requirement of our labor union agreement.
Chairman.
Okay.
But that's a, Jack, that doesn't go to Section 13 of the bill. That's not your people who they're talking about in 13.
What is 13?
That's the one that says the person's appointed commissary or contract carrier service.
That amendment hadn't been presented when I testified, Senator.
Okay. Okay. You ready for the question? First, we'll call the roll.
Senator Hammond?
Aye.
Senator Hammond?
Aye.
Senator Smith? Senator Kroll?
No.
Senator Wingard?
Aye.
Senator Kulongoski?
No.
Senator Broner?
No.
Motion has failed.
Chairman, I move we eliminate lines the last, the 12 and 13, sections 12 and 13 from the bill.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. 12 would want to be a sub.
Well, whatever my amendments say, 12 and 13. Sub, is it sub 12 or I can't tell?
10, 11. And
line 16 through 21, I guess.
Is sub 12 of section 1. Sub 12 of section 1.
And 13?
Yeah. Line 16 through 21 or 12 and 13.
This is going to take out the taxi cabs. Right?
Takes out the taxi cabs, takes out the common carrier, the contract carrier.
Well, who's the lead then?
Mr. Hammond?
Yes, Senator Hammond.
Taxi cab people told us they don't pay, never have paid. They own their own cab. They don't work for anybody. They just use the cab company name as a source of routing and dispatching. They are in no way, shape, and form an employee. So 12 ought to be retained merely to support the status quo.
I just thought it was the perception for the problem that people on the committee were voting for.
I would defer to that suggestion in relation to 13, but I would argue that the arguments for number 12 were made pretty clearly and strongly by the taxicab.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Hammond.
I personally approach the motion to delete those two sections. Senator Wengard and I have served on a committee this session, and he's talked about the over-regulation of government and the free enterprise system, and we've heard about the small independent businessmen. And section 13 is a section that was presented at the request of one of my constituents who happens to be an independent trucker. He lives in Aspen, and he can go the 12 miles and create a residence in California and create his business there. He doesn't have to pay any workman's compensation. But yet, because he lives in Oregon, does the same job, performs the same work, he has to pay it because of a requirement.
Because his business is located in Oregon.
And Mr. Chairman, to continue, that one of the issues we see constantly in the news over the last several days is that a disgruntled segment of our population about the government rules and regulation interference in the way they're trying to conduct business. We talk about it on the federal level, on the state level, and at all levels. And I really feel that this is an amendment that's trying to correct a very serious problem within a business, not to create a loophole or anything else. It's a straightforward approach to resolve an issue that I feel is important, and I personally would appeal to the members of the committee to leave that language in there, and let's try to help people stay in business rather than putting them out of business.
Mr. Chairman, I thought we just defeated the bill. The reason I was trying to help it out, do you want to hold it over, is that it?
Would you like to hold it over for another?
Is today our last meeting?
Oh, we'll have a meeting Tuesday. We have some more bills in today. We'll have a meeting Tuesday.
Must be the last.
It could be the last, and it could be one more. And with the closing of other committees, it won't be necessary to have a night meeting.
Mr. Chairman, if this bill doesn't pass, are we back to the situation where by administrative rule a decision is made with regard to these people? Right now they're not being covered, or some of them are not being.
In the case of the cab drivers, they're not.
They're not being. Are they likely, are they going to change their administrative rule about the cab drivers?
If I could try and answer. The reason for sale is with the court case, through some of this in doubt. These people are not covered. Court case, there's a question about that. If you want to continue the status quo, then the bill is
Has the court case been resolved, and are they going to be covered if we don't pass this legislation?
Tell not that he was on the call.
You represent the cab company too, Jack?
No, I don't, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Troke, in your file on this bill, you'll find a copy of the letter opinion of the Attorney General, in which he was asked the question, are people who operate certain equipment for hire required to be covered on by workers' compensation? The answer he gave was, unfortunately, the only answer I can give is that it depends.
It depends.
Yes. So what we've asked the legislature and what we ask in our testimony is, please don't leave us in this vague gray area where we don't know when we hire an owner-operator. We can't predetermine whether the courts are later going to say, well, in this case, he was or he was not subject to the master-servant concept. And unfortunately, we just can't make that determination at the time that you engage the person to do some work for you. And so,
I'll tell you what it's done.
We're pleading with you to say, either say it's mandatory that they be covered, or say that they're not covered, because we just can't make that predetermination. Even the Attorney General can't tell us.
Senator Hanlon, I believe, was first here.
I have some information that says if the taxicab people are satisfied that they are covered by some other language in the above statutes here, I think it should be. So if it's a matter of contention with the committee, that group of people would be content with eliminating 12.
It's really, we can leave it as is or eliminate.
Yeah, that's right. It wouldn't really make any difference.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, if there are three major parts of the bill that are open-ended, I believe. One is Section 13. Now, that's the one Senator Hannon wants very badly, but it's extremely broad. Secondly, the one that I want you to look on lines 3 and 4 of the proposed amendment. Because if you read the Attorney General's opinion, he only talked about a person. But whoever submitted the amendments has included are persons operating as partners. How many partners? You're talking about somebody having a company. You're talking about a large number of people potentially who would be excluded from the workers' comp law. This is the very thing that everybody's been arguing about these 5 and 6 and 10 people getting into these so-called phony partnerships and just circumventing the law. So that's the first, that's the second one. And the third one is on, it's two of them together, it's lines 13, 14, and 15, which he says a tractor, I have no idea what a tractor is defined as, and E is any other motor vehicle or heavy equipment of a kind commonly operated for hire. There's no definition in that. You'd be litigating and arguing forever what you're talking about. And there's three if in fact, if the bill's going to pass at a minimum, to have any sort of continuity in the law, you have to take out a person's operating as partners, take out lines 13, 14, and 15, and take out lines 19, 20, and 21.
Jack?
Mr. Chairman, the wording that Senator Kulongowski is discussing is wording that already exists in ORS 656-140.
But you're covered.
Oh, pardon?
You're covered.
No, this is wording in that section of the statute, Senator, that says that these people may elect to provide coverage for themselves. I just wanted to point that out. The suggestion, the reason this amendment was brought to this committee was because the SAFE management people said to be consistent, perhaps the bill should say this, then it is consistent with 656-140.
You wouldn't have any problem then they're taken out. If you take out a person's operating as partners, and then take out the language that I suggested, you wouldn't have any problem with that, as far as what you're concerned about, the part of the bill that you want.
Yeah.
You'd be willing to live with the bill with all those out.
Our problem, our bill relates only to owner-operators of dump trucks.
I know, Jack. Jack, you know,
that's where our problem emanated from.
And everybody else has tacked on to it, and it's got all to the point where you've got a major conflict with it.
Anything further? If not, there's no motion.
Then what would satisfy you in cleaning it up?
Well,
you don't have, not to the point where you vote for it. But
okay, I think at a minimum, I think, George, you have to take out, and I, Len, I'm not going to get down to your amendment.
Why don't we do this? I don't think we have time to do it today.
Well, we don't do it. We don't do it.
What happens to Tuesday?
Well, I
would. How still?
Can I just suggest sure. one? George, I would suggest on lines 3 and 4, you delete the phrase "are persons operating as partners."
Mm-hmm.
So you take that out.
Okay.
I think you take out lines 13, 14, and 15, which restrict, you know, because there's no definition there. And then the last one is the one that I think is extremely broad, but Senator Hannon's already told you his opposition to that. And I think that if you delete, not counting 19, 20, 21, but if you delete the rest of the lines, I think Mr. Kalinowski's problem is satisfied as to what he's after.
Okay, would you go over those amendments again?
Okay, I would, for a motion, I would move that we delete on lines 3 and 4 are persons operating as partners, and then delete lines 13, 14, and 15.
Isn't tractor defined in the statute, Jack?
No place that I know of.
What's wrong with 14, Senator Kalinowski?
Because you've got any motor vehicle. Let me just read it, George. Of a kind, it's a very broad definition that includes anything. Whether
take this out,
I don't know exactly what the limitation of it is, and you've got the phrase heavy equipment, which again is just like the word tractor, which my understanding is I don't know the definition of it.
I do. I recognize one more than I see one.
I mean, but that's it. I mean, that's exactly what's going to be happening.
All right, then what else?
And then I think that 13, 14, and 15 have to come on. I mean, lines 19, 20, and
21. Once we make these amendments, then who does get exempted?
Mr. Kalinowski and the taxi cab drivers.
Well, it's not me. It's not us. It's
sorry,
the people that we hire as owner-operators of dump trucks, Senator.
That's
and the taxi
Chairman, cab. I understand the motion or discussion to take out the word tractor on line 13. Is that part of it?
Yes.
As Mr. Kalinowski told us what that might do?
He said no because he said he doesn't know where there's a definition at.
A tractor, is that considered a part of a truck? Is it not, Bob?
No.
Nice.
Tractor can be a...
A tractor,
crawler with a bulldozer.
Only within the industry. It's kind of a driver. This could mean a tractor as far as a truck is concerned, too. I mean, the one that hooks onto a trailer is referred to as a tractor, right? I see. Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator
Hanlon does.
My concern would be that somebody might have meant by a tractor a bulldozer, which is a piece of equipment related to the language just above.
What about a leveler
equipment?
Look at C. Look what he's got there.
Where?
C.
Well, you think other similar equipment for digging and filling trenches or ditches? Are you suggesting?
No, I don't know. I mean, Jack, you could say, though.
Well, a tractor, a backhoe, or other similar equipment, you could
Mr.
use.
Mr. Chairman, one of your staff and I discussed the wording that is that you are discussing with Legislative Council. Legislative Council concluded that in all likelihood the courts would probably construe all of the equipment that is listed in here to be construction equipment.
So a bulldozer would be covered by some of the other language?
Yes, by the language tractor, or I suppose you could say used for digging and filling trenches. Bulldozers used for filling trenches.
Well, why would they? We have this referred to motor vehicle used in transportation of logs, and we have a motor vehicle in transportation of rocks could be considered in construction, and taxi cabs in long haul. Why would a tractor necessary be considered? Why would they interpret it as construction without specifically naming a tractor when it's used in construction?
Perhaps Rocky can repeat what the Legislative Council advises. I just tried, and I don't, perhaps, Mr. Chairman, I didn't have the full attention, but the Legislative Council said that the context of this
would
indicate that very strongly that the intent is to limit it to equipment that is normally used in
to heavy equipment.
Okay.
You know, let me just try something, Mr. Chairman, just take a second. If you would write the sentence to you as such, a backhoe or similar equipment used for digging, comma, filling ditches, comma, trenches, comma, or loading of dirt or similar material. Or loading dirt, gravel, or similar material.
Does that make it clear as far as this is
concerned?
Yeah.
Sure.
If it's dirt, gravel, or similar material.
Senator Wingard, they use it in their rock, gravel, sand, you know, or asphalt concrete. If you want to repeat the words that are already there.
Yeah, okay, we should use the words of the science there, all right.
I think you're right.
Okay, we'll use rock, gravel, sand, dirt, or asphaltic concrete. Or loading.
If you'll allow, Senator, well, okay, fine.
That's the same language that's in the bill.
Yeah.
Read it then, George.
All right.
What word?
Backhoe or, line 11, a backhoe or similar equipment used for digging, comma, filling ditches, comma, trenches, or loading gravel, rock, sand, dirt, or asphaltic concrete.
Mr. Chairman, I've got another suggestion. About if it read a backhoe or other similar equipment used for digging, filling, loading, or spreading rock, gravel, sand, or asphalt concrete.
That's better.
Yeah. Okay, we got that.
George, why don't you, if you're so inclined, then why don't you move as part of that whole motion? If you want to, or a person operating, do you want me to do that? Want me to make my motion like that?
Yeah, I was just trying to help that definition out. What?
Okay, what I would propose, Mr. Chairman, with the definition that Senator Hannah and Senator Winslow have worked out on that part, I would propose that on line three. The phrase "are persons" and on line 4 "operating as partners" be deleted, and that line 13, 14, and then on line 11 and 12 the definition that they came up with be inserted, and line 13, 14, and 15 be deleted.
Okay.
At this
okay,
time.
Okay. Now that does that take care of, would take care of the common carrier would be included in there?
No. I have left that amendment alone. I'll deal with that.
Okay,
we all understand the motion.
You heard the motion, with delete or persons, operating as partners, and you would, you had the Wingard Hanlon amendment here on line 14.
Line 11, 12.
And that's it.
And delete line 13, 14, 15.
And delete line 13, 14, 15, which has already been included. Are there any objections? Hearing none, it is so.
Now, the last one, Mr. Chairman, is the minimum, as I said, and we tried this, and Senator Hand does not want it taken out of section 13.
A cab.
No, the cab is the end.
13, no, a person who forms common carrier, contract carrier service, and both furnishes them. Okay, let me ask you this. Senator Kulongoski, you know, we had a bill here before long which would allow the HODED to escape from workers' comp with you sitting on the floor of the Senate. Can you explain to me why these people who are independent truckers are not entitled to at least do this? The same extent as our HODED, the privilege of operating as independent contractors without paying workers' comp. They own hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of equipment. A HODED owns a pick and shovel.
Chairman, I want you to know that I did not realize that I hit the floor so uninformed on that bill, but after listening to your eloquent plea, I became educated and I said, by golly, he's got something to that issue. I said, by golly, I think we just should all sit right down there and not let anybody out. The point is, Mr. Chairman, I want you to know that the bill was introduced, and you have to look at the original bill, and Mr. Kalinowski got it over here, and it was a very limited exemption, which he was after, and he told us that very candidly. He said, all I wanted was the independent dump truck people. And what happened, and then all of a sudden, everybody comes in and they see the train coming and they all hook on. And what started out as a rather minor exemption in the bill has ended up into a rather lengthy one. And I'm really, believe me, section 13 is the loudest one they've ever had.
Okay, let's get this bill over with here, damn it. You're ready to make a motion.
We've adopted the. I'll move the bill as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
That's which would encourage, include the. Would include lines 16, 17.
Well, Mr. Chairman, before I leave, then I'll move that we delete section 13.
You move to amending my motion?
Yes, I move amend your motion to delete my section 13.
Okay, we'll vote on the amendment first. All those in favor of deleting section 13 will answer, signify by saying aye, their names are called. Those opposed, no. Let's take a roll call.
Senator Hanlon?
No.
Senator Hanlon?
No.
Senator Smith? Senator Crowe?
Aye.
Senator Wingard?
No.
Senator Kulongoski?
Aye.
Senator Groner?
You don't vote no, I'm going to move to adjourn.
Right. That's
the tough one. I've
got Bob Knight down there glaring at
me. Richard,
you
survive more than.
And my hand hurts. You know, I.
Not very often in the cabin. It sure now happens. I'll go die. The motion is carried.
No.
No.
3-3. Motion is failed.
Okay.
Let's go back to the original motion and to what the original candidate's bill was before everybody takes on it.
who all voted on?
You and I and Senator Gorin.
Okay. You read the vote back, Joanne.
Okay.
Senator Hanlon, no. Senator Hanlon, no. Senator Crow, aye. Senator Wingard, no. Senator Kulongoski, no. Senator
Groner, no. Kulongoski was aye.
Excuse me. Senator Kulongoski, aye. And Senator Groner, aye. Senator Wingard, no.
3-3 was the vote.
3-3 was the vote. Mr. Chairman, I'd move House Bill 2726 out to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation.
That. As it's presently
amended.
This is still in. Okay, you heard the motion. Any discussion? The clerk will call the roll.
Senator Hanlon?
Aye.
Senator Hanlon?
Aye.
Senator Smith? Senator Crow?
No.
Senator Wingard?
Aye.
Senator Kulongoski?
No.
Senator Groner?
No. Motion is still. Let's take. Let's take the bill as it was when it first came here.
The original bill?
I will trust the original bill for all the amendments filed on. You know what? My thinking is that these people, if they want such legislation, they should have been here early in the session instead of trying to tag on. I objected to the central warehousing tagging on to the bills that we had here, and I object to this bill. Taking on and destroying the bill that a particular industry has interested in and with this cause hurt the office chances of bill passing.
Yes.
So I would like to confine it to the original bill.
The bill is then as it came over from the House as the way it was originally printed.
Yes.
Isn't it just 27-26 as printed?
Yeah.
Isn't it where it came from the House?
Yeah.
Okay.
The only changes are on lines 33 and 34. In the bill. Okay.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you know, we sure could have improved this bill a little bit by adding just that one additional line regarding the backhoe similar equipment. And I would move that we'd add that to the bill.
Add what to the
bill? The section that says backhoe or similar equipment used for digging, filling trenches, ditches, trenches, loading, spreading of rock, asphalt, gravel, sand, and asphaltic concrete.
Okay, you've heard the motion.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
May I, Senator Kulongoski?
Go right ahead.
With the suggested changes in lines 3 and 4 that you proposed, and the wording that Senator Hanlon and Senator Wingard proposed relating to the equipment that is used for spreading, loading, etc. Would the committee consider adopting that amendment down through line 15, taking out tractor?
Back on further.
You mean line 11, 12, 13, and eliminate 13 a tractor?
Yes. It'll eliminate 13 and line 16 through 21. I think that would eliminate a lot of the controversy that perhaps some of the members feel.
No, I'm not. Okay, but 13 and 15, what do you want to do with that, Jack?
That's reworded.
14 and 15?
Well,
Eliminated 13.
Your suggestion was to delete line 13.
Yeah,
11 and 12 have been reworded.
Okay, 11 and 12. And what I understood what you wanted to do was delete the rest of the bill.
Yeah. No, I'm going back to the suggestion you made, Senator. You suggested deleting or persons operating as partners, comma. You suggested, and then going down on the bill, Senators Hanlon and Wingard suggested some wording.
Okay.
For lines 11 and 12, you suggested deleting lines 13.
13, 14, and 15, I said.
Okay.
We deleted all of those, in fact, in the amendment.
All right. I was hoping you'd leave 14 and 15 in, but...
No, that was my motion, to leave them.
Then deleting lines 13 through 21. Would the committee consider that amendment?
I so move, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, you've heard Senator Wingard's motion. Are there any discussion? Clerk will call a roll.
George, just so I understand it.
Now, let me tell you again what I mean. On lines 3 and 4, we take out all persons operating as partners. That's first of all.
Okay.
Then we use the rest of the language down until line 12, and that's it. And we add the new 11 and 12 that I reiterated once before, which gives better definition to that equipment that does spreading and loading and trenching and filling and ditching of materials that are rock, gravel, sand, dirt, or asphaltic concrete.
Now, this would this apply to the construction industry only, as it was originally intended?
Pretty well, Mr. Chairman.
Pretty well.
That was the intent of the bill, and that's
the intent of the bill.
Jack, can I ask you one more question? You've added on line 5, the current law says on lines 33 to 35, they say the test is, and who both furnishes and maintains the vehicle used in such transportation. And you've changed that, and you've used the terminology, and are engaged in the business of operating such equipment for hire. Now, was it your intent to change the test?
No. As I said before, these are amendments suggested by the State Action Insurance Fund to be consistent with another statute.
And we could state in the record, if you'd like, Senator Kulongoski, that the intent of those words, not to change the intent of the words in the original statute, but only to clarify.
Okay, that's why I want to make sure, because you've had a test established for some years under the other section, and I just would hate to see us, because you know the people are getting jostled around in this. They're log poles and piling, more you know those people. And I just want to make sure that if we change the language, that those aren't the people that they're going to be getting a call from the State Action Insurance Fund saying the legislature changed the test on you. You guys aren't qualified now because the way you used to do it isn't the way the law reads now. And it's clearly not the intent to change the standard for determining whether, in fact.
No.
What about the gentleman from the board here in the compliance section? Do you see a difference in the test?
Transportation is not, excuse me, but I'm very young, Mr. Compliance Division. Transportation isn't in this new language.
Okay, what if I did this? If I would go to line 5 and after the and, if we delete are engaged in the business of operating such equipment for hire and insert and who both furnishes and maintains the vehicle used in such transportation.
It doesn't bother me at all.
It doesn't bother me at all.
Would that make it easier for you?
Well, I'm really not certain. I'm just trying to compare this to the original verbiage of what they know. And seemingly, operating doesn't necessarily mean. The question is, does operating mean physically operating the equipment, or does it mean having equipment, utilizing stuff?
No, that's what I think the definition, that's why I think it means transportation. Mr. Chairman, as part of that, would the committee...
I have none of the motion to include that language.
You got it now? Do you understand what it is?
Can you repeat that?
Okay. On line 5 of the amendment, after the word and, delete the rest of the line. And on line 6, delete the first 3 words, equipment for hire. And then insert this new language, who both furnishes and maintains the vehicle used in such transportation.
Would you have to say vehicle and or equipment?
Okay, and a vehicle and our equipment used in such transportation. Okay, Jack.
Senator, you still have
vehicle
that.
Or equipment.
I'm sorry, vehicle or equipment. Okay, then go ahead.
Well, now you have a person who have in line four there. That'll have to be correct.
Okay, that's a grammatical change.
Yeah,
you guys,
but still, that would stay in there. We have an ownership at least.
Right. Guys are the lawyers.
Okay. Any further suggestions?
I move that up.
Okay, you move with...
That's the amendment you're moving, George?
Yes,
we haven't adopted that.
Okay, I move that amendment.
Okay, would you read the amendment back to us?
Right. Who, on line four, it starts out.
Okay.
Okay. On line three, you take out or persons operating as partners, and then you start out who has an ownership and leasehold interest in equipment and who both furnishes a vehicle
and maintains
equipment.
You heard the motion. Are there any objections? Hearing none, the amendment is adopted.
Move the bill off.
Okay. Motion is to move House Bill 2726 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. The clerk will call the roll.
Senator Hanlon?
Aye.
Senator Hannon? Senator Smith? Senator Crowe?
Aye.
Senator Wingard?
Aye.
Senator Kulunga?
Aye.
Senator Groner?
Aye. Motion carries.
The hope is on our side.
We got another bill from 375, which is already has amendments here. They were adopted on Friday, June the 15th committee. The bill is now endorsed for the city to vote on.
The bill that?
Senate Bill, House Bill 3075.
The
bill is in good shape. Is someone here from the banking interest, Doug? The bill is, as far as 3075, is in good shape as it is. And no objections to it. I'll entertain a motion to send 3075, House Bill 3075, to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Crowe?
Yes.
So moved. 3075, House Bill 3075.
I think so.
Okay. The clerk will call a roll.
Did we guarantee the bill, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Aye.
Senator Smith?
Aye.
Senator Smith? Senator Crowe? Senator Wingard?
Aye.
Senator Kulongoski?
Aye.
Senator Groner?
Aye. Motion is carried, and
you don't have
to. We got one bill left, but where's the committee?
It's on
this.
Which one's that?
Maxillofacial Services.
Yeah. Do we have any amendments to that bill?
No, there are no amendments.
I move the bill out to the floor of the due pass.
I have to find another
amendment.
Yeah. Hang on.
I have a motion to send it out too fast.
Okay. You heard the motion. The clerk will call the roll.
Senator Hanlon?
Aye.
Senator Hannon? Senator Smith? Senator Crowe? Senator Wingard?
Aye.
Senator Kulongoski?
Aye.
Senator Groner?
No. Motion failed. We are adjourned.
Did he do 3075?
Huh?
Did 3070?